just a lot of our cultural messages around beauty, around body image, around movement are so disordered and are just depleting us of life. And I also started to see it through a spiritual lens. And I'm not someone, I don't think there's a demon around every corner, but I do think that there are very real pulls on our lives. And I do believe that certain things have certain gravity. And when it comes, like spiritual gravity, and in particular, I think the idea of beauty and how it has been skewed and how we have been taught to, quote, steward our bodies when it comes to beauty. And, you know, I think that gets wrapped up in food, et cetera, and movement. I do believe that it has become so warped, and I do think that the enemy can use it and does use it as a tool of shame and to really bring us down.
Hey there. Welcome to the Graced Health Podcast, your source for aging strong in your physical, mental, and spiritual health. My name is Amy Connell. I'm a weight neutral certified personal trainer and nutrition coach who loves walks with friends, chocolate, and Jesus. Whether you're looking to grow stronger as you age, nourish your body, mind, and spirit, or fit all the pieces of your health together to holistically thrive, this is the place for women over 40. I'm here to guide you in the areas I can and bring on experts in the areas I'm still learning. And of course, we cover it all in a whole lot of grace. I'm glad you're here. I have been sitting here trying to put words to today's conversation. And when I just kind of type out some of those words, I type out the words rich, beautiful, redeeming, grace-giving, gentle, all of these come to mind. I hope these sound as lovely to you as they are to me. And if so, I know you are going to just cherish this conversation. Today, I'm speaking with Melissa Johnson, host of the Impossible Beauty podcast and author of Soul Deep Beauty, Fighting for Our True Worth in a World Demanding Flawless. So this is the deal. I recorded this months ago because I have just kind of been ahead on my guests, and I am editing this shortly before it goes live. I have to admit, I needed Melissa's words now more than ever. I felt like I was listening to it with such fresh ears, fresh heart, and this conversation just means so much to me. We talk about Melissa's story of struggling from an eating disorder and healing from it, by the way, body shame, what she calls the baby shower effect. We talk about influencing our daughters and how not to repeat our own patterns of body shame. We talk about breath and just so much more. So let me tell you real quickly about Melissa before we bring her on. She is a marriage and family therapist. She's a spiritual director and teaches an undergraduate course at Bethel University on soul well-being. Melissa is also the founder of Impossible Beauty, a blog and podcast dedicated to redefining beauty as the life of God at work in us and among us. Melissa lives near Minneapolis, Minnesota with her husband, and you can learn more about her at impossible-beauty.com. And I highly recommend that you tune into her podcast and of course, grab your copy of Soul Deep Body as soon as you can. Okay, let's bring on Melissa. Melissa, I'm thrilled you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. Oh, I'm loving it too, because I can hear your Minnesota accent coming.
Oh, no.
No, that's great. That's great. Somehow I escaped growing up in Oklahoma and living in Houston, Texas for 20 years without a real thick Texas accent.
I've lived in Minnesota my whole life, and yeah, definitely, you know, I don't pick up on it, but some words I do, and then I cringe a little bit, but yes.
Well, no, it's just something to embrace, right? It's just part of our story. It tells a little bit about, you know, where we grew up and all of that. So no, that's great. Okay. So we are here today. I have read your book, Soul Deep Beauty. I love, love, love it. And I think it is a wonderful compliment and resource for my community, which is women 40s, 50s, 60s, a little bit beyond, who are looking for holistic health, who are faithful, who faith guides their steps and are learning to re-examine their relationship with their bodies and with food and with exercise. And you have just written a beautiful book that is part story and then part lessons learned as well. It's just such a gift. So first, I just want to thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much.
Part of your story revolves around body shame and eating disorders. And these are so common among women and especially young women. I have been in the throes of writing a book for young women. And so I absolutely know this is applicable to them. But also, I think there are plenty of grown women who are struggling with this as well, possibly with even more shame that we're wanting, you know, trying to cover up. I was wondering if you could start us out by telling some of your story.
To your point, I mean, I think it's like 85 to 95% of women struggle with body image to the point of hating their bodies. And so I think if, you know, listeners right now are thinking, you know, am I in the minority here? Definitely not. So yes, this is such a huge issue for so many women. So my own story, you know, I think it goes back even further than this, but in the book I talk about, you know, probably about 9 years ago now, I was working as a marriage and family therapist and also working with my own personal therapist. And she let me know that my relationship with food and body and movement was maybe a little bit disordered. And she said, she started subtly and then eventually said, I'm inviting you to do some intensive work around this and kind of, I'm going to end working with you. You have to do some intensive eating disorder treatment as kind of your next step. Wow. And so that really threw me. And long story short, I ended up making the decision to pause my work as a therapist and enter intensive eating disorder treatment, which I saw as a huge like roadblock. And, you know, it totally, you know, messed my, or threw my world, the world I knew, kind of into a tailspin. And what ended up happening though, is I ended up getting a lot of healing in my own experience with or my own relationship with food and body image. But also what I started to realize probably, I don't know, months into treatment is a lot of the beliefs and struggles and behaviors that I was seeing in the treatment rooms were actually a lot of the same beliefs and struggles that were happening outside of the treatment rooms. A lot of the conversations I was having with peers or, you know, just experiencing out in the world and seeing on commercials, I was like, these are the same beliefs and ideas that I am being told are disordered and that I am being encouraged to walk away from. So I was realizing how disordered our culture is and was. And on the other side of treatment, I started to just, I couldn't not say something. I started to see just how this, I call it, we're being sold a broken brand of beauty is the phrase I say, or that I've learned to adapt. But I just truly think we are, when it comes to this idea of beauty and how we're supposed to treat our bodies and restrict food and push ourselves to the max, just a lot of our cultural messages around beauty, around body image, around movement are so disordered and are just depleting us of life. And I also started to see it through a spiritual lens. And I'm not someone, I don't think there's a demon around every corner, but I do think that there are very real pulls on our lives. And I do believe that certain things have certain gravity. And when it comes, like spiritual gravity, and when it comes to this idea, when it comes to women in particular, I think the idea of beauty and how it has been skewed and how we have been taught to, quote, steward our bodies when it comes to beauty. And, you know, I think that gets wrapped up in food, et cetera, and movement. I do believe that it has become so warped. And I do think that the enemy can use it and does use it as a tool of shame and to really bring us down. And so on the other side of treatment, I couldn't not say something. And these ideas and this passion was stirring inside of me. And so on the other side, I did create this podcast called Impossible Beauty, which is also a blog. And that was the pathway to what is now the book, trying to help women, help us wake up to how we are being played when it comes to beauty and really wanting to bring some awareness around some of those messages around beauty and food and how I believe we've been brainwashed. And I think we know this to a certain extent, like pre my experience with an intensive eating disorder treatment, I would have told you like, yeah, I know like the images we look at aren't real. I didn't know much about diet culture, to be honest, but I did not realize the depths to which I believe that these messages are depleting us, destroying some. And I do think I did not realize the gravity that they hold and to various extents in different women's lives, but I had to say something.
I'm glad you did. One of the things that struck me is the beliefs and struggles that you shared that was kind of the same in treatment as well as out of treatment. To me, the word that comes to mind is normalized.
Yes.
Because, and I think that that's also why, like if you said you didn't know much about diet culture, that's because everything we see surrounding food and stewarding our bodies, I shouldn't say everything, but predominantly is wrapped up in diet culture and managing our bodies and managing what we eat for the sake of managing our bodies. So I think that that has been a journey that I've been on for a while as well, and just kind of realizing how much of what we have been told is not necessarily truth to who we are and how we should be taking care of ourselves.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I have a lot of conversations, and I'd be curious to hear if the same thing happens to you, Melissa, but because I have shared a lot of my struggles, because I have just a heart for walking alongside women in their body shame. And of course, I love the health aspect as well. As a personal trainer and nutrition coach, like I absolutely realize the benefits that both of these can have. I was doing some research for my upcoming young women's book. My friends have children, and half of them approximately are young women. So they'll talk to me. And then of course I've got Facebook friends and all of that kind of stuff. So I was kind of doing some anecdotal research, and I just put out several questions or several statements. I said, which one resonates with you the most? And there was overwhelming majority of one particular question. And that was, how do I help my daughter live a healthy lifestyle without creating food and body image issues? I mean, this is kind of the million-dollar question, it seems like. Because you have so much experience in so many different areas, including being a marriage and family therapist, I would love to know if you have any guidance for this very difficult question.
It's an excellent question. I was just pulling up a statistic here. So we know that girls' body dissatisfaction was predicted by how they perceive their mom feels about their own body. And so I just think, you know, this idea of modeling our behaviors around food, modeling our behaviors about how we treat our body, but how we even talk about our body, how we think about our body, I think that that cannot be underestimated. And so I know it can feel maybe, you know, a bit removed, but I think doing our own work as, you know, as moms around our own relationship with our bodies, our own relationship with food, I think that when we are kind of able to model kind of helpful nutrition, you know, balanced nutrition, I'll say, making sure that we are not, you know, cutting out certain food groups and not, you know, speaking with fear about certain kinds of foods or elevating kinds of certain foods when it comes to sweets or whatever, that we aren't saying that those are bad or wrong. I think oftentimes there is this fear that can come with food around for so many reasons. And so one reframe that I've done in my own life is seeing food as a gift. Instead of thinking about, like, I don't know if it's like broccoli or something, instead of thinking about it as like, this is what I should eat and I should start with it or whatever, I should fill up on this, which is such a diet culture related message. I've learned to think about like all different foods, like each as a gift, like even with sugar, which I know can get such a bad rap these days, but like, it is amazing that it can give me like quick energy that I need. Or like with the broccoli, thinking about like the amazing vitamins and minerals it provides my brain and my body. And so I'm wondering what it would be like to speak about the gift of food with children, I think is one thing. But then also I think the biggest thing we can do is modeling when it comes to, you know, what we're serving, how we're speaking about food, how we're speaking about our own bodies. And I think that so much of that goes back to perhaps doing our own work around this, which I think likely women listening to your podcast are trying to do just that. And so I think that that's a beautiful thing.
I agree. You know, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is the other part of this is these children are very attuned to us often, and we can't fake it. I love how you said, you know, we've got to do our own work around this, because just saying that, they'll sniff that out in a heartbeat. If our actions and our words don't necessarily mirror our hearts, and it's an easy thing to say, like, okay, well, we're going to model this. It's a harder thing to actually change our heart posture and do, yes. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it. It's funny. I have, so this book that I've written, and I'm sorry to talk about my book, but I think it's really applicable in this part of the conversation. So every chapter is a question, and like, is sugar bad for me? Is one of the chapter titles. Will carbs make me fat? And I come at this with the posture of there are no good and bad foods. Wow. There are no morals. And I am anticipating some pushback from parents who are going to come at me and say, why are you telling me that my kid can have sugar? Which in it, my whole focus is, how does this food make you feel and function? Because it is a gift to make us be able to feel better and function better. And I think when we start to be aware, then we can go through that process. But I'm prepared for that. Like, I'm ready for this. Because going back to what we were talking about, it's, well, how did that work out for you? In like the most gentle and loving tone, like, how did it work out for you having these rules around our food? Yeah. And it didn't work out that great for me.
Yes, yes. Perhaps you talk about this in other episodes on your show, but you know, it's like a tenet of intuitive eating, or a thought around intuitive eating, is I think oftentimes there can be this misconception like, well, if no food is good or bad, then I'm going to probably just eat all of the Hostess cupcakes in the world and, you know, never eat anything else. Another lesson that I've learned is just the beauty of, like, when we do tune into our bodies, they actually don't want Hostess cupcakes all the time. Like, if you've been depriving yourself of that for months or years, yes, you know, our bodies can go into that like starvation mode. And so that can be a pull at first. However, once things normalize, I really do trust our body's wisdom that we will gravitate toward the things that our bodies really need. And so yes, I love your messaging that you're bringing forth in your book. That sounds great.
Leslie Schilling, the author of Feed Yourself, said it, our good and wise bodies. And I think she's been on your podcast as well. And I just think that that's so gentle and powerful at the same time.
Yes.
One of the other things that I loved in your book is you shared this story of a transformation during a yoga class. I love participating in yoga and all kinds of other things. But while you were in intensive treatment, you did this yoga class. And I would love for you, if you don't mind, to share the connection that you made during this yoga class and how it really spread far beyond just the act of yoga.
Yes, yes. This was part of our treatment protocol, was doing yoga every day, which I was very like not excited about at first, because I wanted to just like get healed and then like leave treatment.
And can you, before you, what, where did you come in terms of a movement? Like hard exercise, no exercise, somewhere in between? So set up where, what was normal to you before?
Yeah. That was part of my disorder, I would say, was I overexercised. Okay. And so part of one of my treatment challenges was to not do movement when I was in treatment. Besides this yoga, which was not, it was very gentle yoga. Right. So, I mean, that's a good point, because I'm thinking, yes, the way I treated my body previous to this was very different than how this kind of yoga invited me to treat my body. And so what was different, one day we had a substitute yoga teacher, and there was something about her presence, but then also the way she would word things. And one of the things, you know, usually in a yoga class, oftentimes they'll invite you to notice your breath. And that particular day, something hit different about that. I don't know if it was, you know, exactly who she was or how she was wording things, or if, you know, I was just more open to God's spirit in those moments. But I had this, all of a sudden, like this transition from noticing my breath. The realization was just what a miracle that is. Like, even thinking about our conversation today, Amy, like, how many times have I like took a breath, and, or how many times has my heart beat today since we began? And like, I don't think about that. I never think about how my body is actually sustaining me and what a gift that is. And so for a moment, I, you know, at first I realized like this was this idea of my body being a miracle and like my life being a miracle really started to sink in. And then she said something like, the yoga instructor said something like, you know, notice your breath, a centering force that's with you all the time. And all of a sudden that like my realization kind of sank in deeper. And I realized like God's breath, like God's spirit is with me like all the time. And all of a sudden I had this image of like God's love, like swirling around me and in me like all the time. And I had this centering force, this spirit with me all of the time. And I even thought about like back in Genesis when God breathed breath into like the first human and how really like God is breathing life into us moment by moment and like literal breath and also like the breath of his spirit. And so what I started to do like in those moments, it really shifted my relationship with my body. It shifted my relationship with like noticing the presence of God in the present moment. And I started to see my body, I think, in, you know, I had this like adversarial relationship with my body and previous to that. And I do think that that is oftentimes what our culture teaches us to do is, you know, to push our bodies and to ignore things like hunger cues. And, you know, there's that old just do it Nike phrase, like, you know, even if you're so tired or whatever, just keep running. And so those were the messages that I had structured my relationship with my body around. And so I would get annoyed if my body got hungry or tired. But instead, I started to really befriend my body, seeing it for the miracle that it was and for like the partner it was in my life. And then also starting to experience the very real tangible presence of God and how life-sustaining it was literally, and also life-sustaining in terms of like God's life within me was present moment to moment, like all of the time. And so those are some of the major shifts that happened in one yoga class.
That's incredible. That's a lot too.
Yes, yes.
I'm wondering how sometimes, I don't know about you, Melissa, but I'll have something similar to that. Yeah. And I kind of ride high on that for a little bit. Mm. And then it will kind of taper off as life gets back to normal. And I keep getting the punches of everyday life and all of that. How did that moment pivot you or shift you into this new relationship with befriending your body and with truly acknowledging, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word, that, you know, the spirit of God and having that realization.
Mm. Like, how did I continue it from there? Is that?
Yeah. Like what happened next, I guess, is a simple way of saying that.
Yes. Yeah. It's such a good question. And I do feel like God was trying to teach me something. Cause I think there are so many, there are like points of convergence like that. Like, I feel like I was being taught that in a number of different directions. And so like, honestly, I think it shifted my yoga practice then. And so every time I would go into yoga, then going forward, I think my brain, like my neurocircuitry, like the way I was thinking about breath, the way I was connecting with my body was different. And so I think I'm thinking of like how to like to make that transferable for others, you know, in those moments, those aha moments we have. And so, you know, I think probably integrating that into our bodies even, you know, and can repeated ways, because that's how our brains and our bodies work, what fires together, wires together. So I think for me, continuing that practice of yoga and then having that shift every time I would practice it really solidified that, as well as something that I also talk about in the book is I was simultaneously getting a degree in spiritual formation. And so I would, during the day, I would have these kind of shedding these ideas of cultural beauty and diet culture during in treatment during the day. Those things would be kind of pointed out for the lies that they were. And then in the evening, I would go home and I would read about like the Christian mystics' love for God and how they would have these like amazing experiences knowing God's love in really deep and beautiful ways. I also simultaneously during this time was learning about one of the theologians I learned about. His name was Baxter Kruger. And he talked about the great dance is his, I think that's the title of his book. And he talks about how this idea of the dance since the beginning of time has been played out between the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, this dance of love, and how that dance is actually being played out in us and among us all of the time. And so when we hear like children laughing, or when, again, my heart is beating or I'm breathing, the rhythm of life and the rhythm of love is at work in and around us all of the time. And so I had those messages also being taught to me. And so it was like, clearly, I feel like God was trying to teach me new ways of thinking, new ways of being in the world. And so I think that that definitely helped as well, kind of solidified some of these things that I was experiencing, like things I experienced, such as in yoga.
That's great. You know, the vision I see between the intensive treatment during the day mm-hmm. and then the spiritual formation at night is just like somewhat like God coming through and just prying open, prying open your heart, prying into the depths of where he wanted to be and outside of the surface of what we've been told.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
One of the other terms that you used, I think it's actually a chapter title that I loved, and I thought we have got to talk about this here, is you call it the phenomenon of the baby shower effect. So yes. I would love for you to explain what that is and then how we can combat that when we find ourselves in the baby shower effect situation.
I'm guessing women who are listening can likely relate to this. So I would notice that when I would go to an all-female event, and so I chose a baby shower because oftentimes that's all female, someone is bound to pick up on these cultural ideas around food or our bodies, whether it's someone saying how bad they are for eating a brownie at the gathering, or how they're trying to do this new diet or this new quote, you know, program, because we don't oftentimes don't call them diets anymore, the new cleanse or whatever. Basically, this idea of the baby shower effect is we take these cultural narratives and we run with them in our all female groups. And what that does is it actually picks up the momentum of those narratives. And so there's this term in psychology called group polarization. And so it's this idea that when we have a belief that is spoken about in a group, it actually picks up more momentum. And so that is what I call the baby shower effect when it comes to cultural narratives around, or narratives around beauty, and I would say body image and food. And so how we can combat that is, you know, I think we have more power than we think we do. And I think when we actually can kind of start to see and tease apart what these messages of diet culture and beauty culture are and how they're actually tearing us down, I think it can give us some momentum to fight against them. And so how we can combat that is, instead of talking about, you know, how bad or good our food choices are, or the diet we're on, or how many steps we took, we can actually start talking more about like the function of our bodies, the strength of our bodies, the gift of our bodies. And so what I'm inviting us as women to do, and that's why the first half of the book is really trying to expose these lies in our culture, because I really do think it is like a brainwashing that we have all been taught to ways to think about our bodies, ways to think about beauty, ways to think about food. And so when we become aware of these things and realize that they are bringing shame, they are depleting us of life, then we can actually let go of them and start new conversations in our own minds, in our own families, in our own homes, but also with other women as well, knowing that, again, we can use group polarization to our advantage, and we can actually start a new, like new momentum in a different direction when it comes to redefining beauty.
New momentum. I love it. So true. And I think too, this also circles back to our points where we were talking about talking with our daughters. And yes. Also, I do think it is important for us to be aware of how we're talking around other young women who are not our daughters, because it may be that you are the cool aunt. It may be that you are that really super fun neighbor, and taking away that group polarization and getting them and planting the seeds in them for, you know, how we're functioning. I always say feel and function, that it's, you know, that it's all a gift. So those are great. And I will say too, that it's hard. Like when you're at a girl's night out and everybody's like digging into the 10 layer chocolate cake at PF Chang's and be like, oh my gosh, I've got to work this off tomorrow. Oh, this is so bad. You know, like it's really hard to say like, hey, time out. Yeah. Actually, let's reframe that. But I think it can change. We can change the narrative and we do have the power to do that, but it does take a bit of braveness.
Absolutely. And I think there are a couple things, the ways that we can take this too. I mean, one thing would be to maybe seek out groups who maybe think in more of a non-diet type of a lens. And, I think that that can help us build some muscles around some of these ideas. I think that that was one thing that was really helpful for me to be in treatment for a while, was to build some new neural pathways around these things. Because if you think about it, we have literally been like sitting in these beliefs for decades. And so it would make sense that it would take a while to actually realize the lies that we've been being fed, but then also to start thinking in a new way when it comes to food in our bodies. And so that's why I think finding groups of people who don't talk poorly about food or about their bodies, and that can feel a little bit overwhelming too sometimes, to be like, find a new group of people, find a new group of friends. The other piece of that then is kind of what you were talking about, is maybe being the vulnerable one in a group and say like, hey guys, I'm just noticing the way that we're talking about this cake. I don't know that it's going to be helpful for us, or like the way we're talking about our bodies, I'm not sure that this is going to be helpful for us. And yes, and I recognize that you're at PF Chang's and everyone's having a lighthearted time to be the person to say that. And I think obviously too, being mindful of when we're feeling strong, and also maybe the next day after that moment of, so you're not feeling like you're the Debbie Downer in the group. But yes, I totally agree with you that it can be so challenging, and I think it's going to be so worth it, because I think it's going to bring us just so much more like thriving and fullness of life when we're able to shed these narratives.
Yeah. And peace as well. Well, yes. You've given us a great thing to say there, is like, hey, is this helpful to us? I like that. And that would probably give people pause for just a second. And, I love how you talk about the neural pathways. And earlier, I want to just circle back to this, because I wrote it down, what fires together wires together. And so the more we're firing all of these words, whether they are helpful or not, they will wire together. And so I think that's a good litmus test for us as well. Like, what I call it, the inner mean girl. What are we firing on the inside in our mind? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I love that you have shared so much of your story, and that you also have spent time growing spiritually and being a spiritual director. And just how incredible. I tell you what, he's pretty cool. Like having you do that dual role during that season of your life, just, I can't imagine the growth that you were experiencing during that time. But we do have a lot of diet culture in safe spaces in church. And depending on how someone may have grown up, depending on the words that they have heard, either from their family of origin or maybe even from the pastor or other influential people in the church, they may feel like God is critiquing us. He's judging us. We have to not necessarily earn our salvation, because I think everybody be like, well, I don't have to earn my salvation with my body. But I think if we were honest, it would be like, well, but I might be a better Christian if I stewarded my body better. And lost some weight. So talk to us about how that perspective changed during treatment, and kind of that during that, I'm going to call it your dual season. I don't know what you want to call it.
Yes.
And speak life into that person who might be struggling with that.
Yeah, yes. So glad you bring this up, because I think we could talk about this for a long time in terms of, church and diet culture. One thing that I kind of came across, and I don't know if others have experienced this, is when it came to issues around food or body image, I got the message oftentimes that, oh, that's idolatry. Like, just don't do it. Like, that's, and so all that really did is increase shame that was already there. And so for me, I had this dual track mentality, kind of, because I didn't really know how my faith converged with this particular struggle, ongoing struggle that I had. And so in the book, I talk about how my faith and my struggle with food and exercise, how they were like parallel tracks. And so I just kind of continued to do life, But there was always kind of an underlying tension because I knew that there was some way that they probably informed each other, but I just didn't know what it was. And so when one day I was actually doing a prayer practice during for my this degree program I was doing in spiritual formation, I would go to intensives in Portland, Oregon. And so I went out there, and during this one prayer time that I had with a partner in real life, this was not a virtual piece of the program. I didn't know, like, would I tell her like the real thing I needed prayer for, or was I going to, you know, give her like a softball or something. But I decided like, I really wanted like some help with this. And so I offered this for this prayer practice that we did. And what came in this prayer practice was not what I anticipated at all. So what happened is my prayer partner invited me to envision the face of Jesus. And what I saw was actually like the most compassionate, empathic eyes and expression. I got this sense of Jesus was not judging me in any way for what I had been going through. Instead, it was like he saw and he knew what I had been going through. He knew the messages that I'd been drowning in my life during my whole life growing up. He knew like every last part of the struggle as deeply or more deeply than I knew it. And it was like we were in it together. Like this when we locked eyes, it was as though he was saying, like, you know, I've seen it all. I'm with you in it. We're gonna do this together. And so coming out of that prayer practice, previously, I thought maybe God was judging me for this struggle or critiquing me. And instead, I was met with this deep compassion and deep empathy and this togetherness or in this together type of a new way of viewing the way forward. And that really shifted things for me going forward from there.
We're in this together. It's easy to forget that sometimes. So yes, that's a great reminder. It's funny, earlier we were talking about breathing. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a big fan of breathing. And, you know, in yoga, there's a lot of intentional breathing. But I tell you what, I will preach to the choir about the benefits of breathing. And let me tell you how hard it is for me to sit down and actually do it. Like it's a win for me if I can get 3 minutes of breathing in the morning. So it is really hard, but I would love for you to share some about what you learned about your breath in treatment. And, you know, let's not even say how you would encourage someone, but maybe how you would encourage me, who knows about the benefits and still has a hard time prioritizing that because it just seems too simple, but just how to, you know, practice connecting to God in that way.
Yes. It's interesting because I can't help but think about just how amazing like God's good design for our bodies are too. And how, you know, when we do slow down to breathe, it can shift us to that parasympathetic nervous system. That is just an amazing, miraculous thing to think about, how we can actually pause and center our bodies like in a very real way. You know, I think if I'm encouraging, as I'm encouraging you to like to do this practice, I do feel like we are so much more, I think, centered. I teach this class on well-being, so I'm like, this keeps going through my mind. We talk about diaphragmatic breathing so much because of how it brings us back to the parasympathetic nervous system, which allows us to access our prefrontal cortex or our logical way of thinking, and how we can then go forth more regulated in terms of our own way of moving through the world and be more thoughtful about the decisions we're making, more thoughtful about our relational interactions, and also it'll be easier to access our relationship with God as well, obviously, if we're thinking more logically. And so I think from one lens, we could think about this as God's centering breath in us and having like starting the day or, you know, midday, maybe grounding ourselves in the presence of God. And this idea that like his life breath is like in us right now, like this life that we've been given is a gift. And this moment is a gift. We won't be given this moment again. I think that is a huge reminder with breath. I also believe, you know, just so much of when it comes to this idea of well-being comes from this idea of being regulated. And so breath also gives us the gift of regulation, which is a gift for ourselves, but also with our interactions with other people and the world around us.
Yeah. God-centering breath within us. I mean, how can we not? And you've given us a lot of really great reasons to do that, to pause, to center our bodies, to be more regulated and more thoughtful, relationship or relational. And then I love, you know, talking about accessing the relationship with God. So yeah, those are great encouragements for me. And if anyone else wants to enjoy that as well. Your book, Soul Deep Beauty, is beautiful. It's just so good. And I would encourage anyone who is interested in restoring their relationship with food, bodies, breath, movement, and really just reframing how we see beauty, because what we have, as you say, we are being lied to. So thank you for writing this. Thank you for putting this out in the world. And I just wish you abundant success with that.
Thank you so much.
I do have a few questions that I ask all my guests. I love learning about people's tattoos. I don't have any, but I have found that when people put tattoos on their body, it's often with meaning, because if you're going to put something on your body for the rest of your life, you often have meaning behind it. So I was wondering if you have any, what is it and the meaning behind it? And if you don't, but you had to get one, what would it be and where would it go?
Oh, I'm going to sound so boring. I do not have one. Oh, that is such a good question. You know, this is just popping in my mind. So my husband and I met up north. We both grew up on the same lake from across the lake from each other, but we didn't meet until in our early 20s. And so that particular lake is a place that I have experienced God in very deep ways, and also where I met my husband, and we were married on that lake. And so I gave him a picture for one of our anniversaries with the coordinates, like the latitude and longitude coordinates. Mm-hmm. So I think I would maybe do those coordinates, but where would I put it? Maybe like on a wrist or something, because then people could see it and also I could see it, a reminder of, to me, it's also a reminder of God's faithfulness, because I would pray at times about like a husband, wondering like, God, is that something that you have for me? After honestly going through marriage and family therapy, my coursework for that, I realized that, marriages are complex, and it made me really afraid, honestly, of getting married. I was not married at that point. After I finished my coursework, I would just remember praying, being like, God, if there's someone that you think would be a good fit for me, like, let me know. And lo and behold, he was actually on that very lake that I had been praying about that.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I love that, the latitude and longitude of that. Super cool. And I love that God answered your prayer with that so specifically. Mm-hmm. You are the host of the Impossible Beauty podcast. And we said in the bio that we can find you at impossible-beauty.com. Is there anywhere else where people can connect with you?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm at melissa.louise.johnson and then at impossible.beauty. And then on Facebook, I'm the Impossible Beauty blog and podcast page there.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Great. And we'll put all of that in the show notes as well. Do you have a meaningful Bible verse that you would like to share?
So yeah, I do. So this is one that actually came to mind. And when I was reading over this invitation for a Bible verse today, and so this might seem kind of like a weird one, but there's one phrase that I wanted to call out in this. So this is 1 Timothy 6:19. And so he says, in this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. And I should, the verse before that is, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. And so the phrase there that this resonates with me every time I read it is to take hold of the life that is truly life. And when I think about this idea of beauty, like authentic beauty, which I'm defining as the life of God at work in us and among us, like for me, that is like the life that is truly life, to really live in that and live in the, like that being our truest reality. So taking hold, encouraging us to take hold of the life that is truly life.
Mm, beautiful. Okay, we've covered a lot, lots of different subjects. What is the one simple thing that you would like us to remember about today's conversation?
Yes, I think it would be that beauty is so much bigger than our culture teaches us if beauty truly is the life of God at work in us and among us, we can't even begin to imagine how big that is. If we can imagine those awe-inspiring moments in nature where we feel so small and God feels so big, but like in a really beautiful way, I would encourage us to maybe think about that kind of imagery when we imagine like what authentic beauty is and how big and glorious it is and how we are actually invited into that reality to be a part of it. And that same beauty is actually in us.
Amen. Okay, that is all for today. Go out there and have a grace day. Thanks for listening today. If this episode was valuable to you, could you do one of two things that are enormously valuable to me, but super simple for you? Number one, just share this with a friend. Super simple. Number two, provide a rating and review, particularly if you listen in Apple Podcasts. This is super valuable for me. Also, if you haven't yet subscribed to my monthly journal, why not? I send it out twice a month, and it is a private, fun space for me to share some of my favorite foods and recipes, movements, books, sermons, and more. You never know what you're going to get, but I promise it will add value to your day. You can sign up at gracedhealth.com/monthly-updates, and of course, the link is in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.